Now back to Cleveland Browns Daily with Jim Donovan and Matt Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Well, it is just about football season, Matt. Yes. It is just about here. As a player in your years getting ready to head to training camp, when the Chargers have training camp, where do they train?
My first 2 years there, we did it at the Home Depot Center, which is in Carson, California.
Is that where the Galaxy play?
Yes.
The soccer team?
Yeah. And they
really?
Had the
where do they have a facility there?
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful center. But they were trying to draw the Los Angeles market, you know,
to support.
Sure. They were still Raider fans. But then we went back down to Charger Park.
All right, so you were a couple of weeks away from training camp, and what would you be doing now?
By this time,
what are our guys doing?
I would always come home here, you know, for about a month or so, and just enjoy family and friends in Northeast Ohio and the weather that it provides. But then I'd always go back about this time to get, you know, kind of back into my San Diego routine, get adjusted to the time, get adjusted to the climate. And I would just be putting in, you know, my daily workouts with a group of guys that were all back in Ohio. Even some guys were training from, you know, out of the state at one of the workout facilities. But it's just getting back into normalcy and, you know, doing a couple of the restaurants here and there to get them kind of out of the way. Because once training camp starts and the season starts,
that's it.
You know, your nightlife is limited.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So that's a Browns player right now is saying, well, I got a couple of more weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to go.
You got to get it in.
And get set and get going with Hugh Jackson here at training camp. The business of sports, okay, while you were away last week, the NBA free agency certainly hit with Kevin Durant announcing that he was leaving Golden State. You don't think that Tim Duncan said, hey, listen, as he retired today, you don't think he said, hey, listen, there's no way we can beat them?
No.
I don't think. He's 40 years old.
I know.
Yeah.
19
and
years.
And you know what? He looked at and I know San Antonio was considered to be a great team in the West, but he had become kind of a role player, I think, for them.
Very much so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it was a playoff game. He went scoreless. He went scoreless multiple times in the regular season, which put a couple streaks had came to an end.
So at 40 years old, he leaves. But the business of sports right now is unbelievable. And I think a lot of people think that the NFL is just this huge, you know, money-making machine, and it is, but for players too. But if you take a step back and you look at the deals that these basketball players were signing, Dwayne Wade at his age being able to command $47 million over 2 years. And, I mean, God bless him. I mean, Matthew Dellavedova and these guys, go get it. But, I mean, the amount of money that they are able to command and how it's so different in the NBA, isn't it?
It is
where
so different.
One player can move. And, of course, we know that twofold, okay, with LeBron leaving and then coming back. But now Durant going out there and the creation of these super teams.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I'm not so much – I wasn't in favor, and I know LeBron is obviously very near and dear to our hearts.
But was an emotional thing.
Correct, but exactly. But I meant him going to Miami to create that super team in Miami with Bosch and Wade. I'm not so much in favor of it, and I think – and I actually love the comments that have come out of, you know, Jordan and Magic and Bird's mouth over the last, you know, week or so since free agency has started. And it's like, you know, Larry Bird just saying, I would never join the Lakers to play with Magic Johnson. Like, never. And it was just, it's just ingrained in who they are to, they want to be the guy, they have the pieces that they need, and they'll make everyone great around them.
You really, this is my thought, and I'll get yours here. I don't think you can create a super team in the NFL. I don't think you can.
No.
I know a quarterback can move, okay, but basically what you do, if you find your quarterback, you know, if you find your guy and he's your franchise quarterback, then you don't even allow that to happen.
Correct.
You sign a big deal, you get him locked up, and then you keep providing toys for him to play with in the way the offensive players, but you keep him. So when the Ravens decided Joe Flacco's the guy, they signed him up, and it might have hurt them a little bit, okay, for what they gave him post-Super Bowl championship. He's their guy, but he's the guy. You don't allow that to happen.
No.
What happened to Golden State?
Right.
What happened to the Cavs? What happened to Miami with Dwayne Wade?
Well, you really can't.
I don't think it's structured the same way that you can do it.
It's not, because I think if Von Miller were to get this $60, $70 million guaranteed that he wants, and you got to figure, if they were to have a guy like Peyton Manning or a franchise quarterback on the other side, they're going to have another player command about the same type of money, that $20 million a year. So you're going to have, you know, $35 to $40 million tied up in two players, and you have to pay 51 others. And I think that's where, you know, you find it very hard. Even though you've got much more wiggle room to play with because of the salary cap, it's just very difficult to do. And I think, speaking on this topic, what is most surprising to me, and I know I'm not like, I don't watch the NBA, you know, night in, night out to understand the NBA and the players the way that I do the NFL, for sure, but what was surprising to me was guys that I've never heard of, or guys whose stat line are 5.8 points a game, 3.2 rebounds, and, you know, 1.6 assists, getting $50 million on a four-year deal.
Look at Mozgov.
Correct.
What he got with the Lakers.
What, $9 million NBA Finals point, whatever it is. I saw that statistic on Bleacher Report. It's mind-boggling to me what some of these guys are getting paid.
Well, and again, I mean, you take a look at the Giants. I mean, look at us here. We would love to give a huge deal to a quarterback here, right? We'd love to give a huge
100%.
Deal. 100%. I mean, let's say Robert Griffin III has a great year coming up, and we certainly hope that. But say he finds the formula again, and the marriage of Robert Griffin III with Pep Hamilton and Hugh Jackson and that offense, and it really starts to roll, and the maturation of these young receivers, and there are a ton of them, okay, and all of that starts to really fall in place. Then the Browns would have a decision, wouldn't they, to make? I mean,
absolutely.
Do we commit?
Yeah.
I mean, are we really committed so much to the progress and the teaching of Cody Kessler?
Right.
Or did we somehow find our guy because Washington, you know, fell out of love with him and fell in love with Kirk Cousins?
Sure.
Did we find our guy? We would love to be able to give a quarterback here, and we have many, many times thought, okay, we're going to give a – well, they did give a ton to Tim Couch because he was at that period where he was the number one overall pick.
In the old CBA.
He gave him the big money.
Correct.
But, I mean, we wanted to give Cole
McCoy.
We
absolutely
did. We wanted to give Brady Quinn a ton of money.
When you look,
we wanted to give Whedon a lot of money.
You look at Jimmy Garoppolo, you know, and sitting behind Tom Brady. He's the heir apparent, but as long as this guy's playing at a certain level – there's no need for your services. There's no baton to be passed. So I have no problem if RG3 deserves the money to be paid and is playing like a franchise quarterback, that if we do so, that there's no problem. I mean, we're talking about the Philadelphia Eagles having Bradford, Daniel Wentz.
Yeah.
That's a good problem to have. They have a quarterback that can win them football games amongst those three.
Yeah, I would
Wouldn't
agree,
we love to have that same problem instead of going, well, he can't do it, let's get rid of him, let's bring in that constant revolving door is, I think, what has been led to a lot of frustration for many Browns fans.
Absolutely. So the business of sports right now, those NBA deals are unbelievable, but the television deal is unbelievable.
It is.
I mean, they have just hit it big.
Yeah.
The league has just hit it so big with television revenue that they're able to explode that salary cap every year. That marker moves up every year, and then it opens up that avenue for these deals to happen. Now, the Durant one was going to happen.
Sure.
But it's these other deals, these secondary deals, that are just really amazing. But again, I wonder, I mean, you only have 15 guys on a team.
Right.
You know, it's different in the NFL. You got a ton of guys, and you really have to be smart about being able to manage the cap and the salary cap and the control of a player's contract. Now you take a look at the UFC, which has been sold now for $4 billion. And that's basically a sport that has exploded in popularity.
I don't get it, but because I'm not enamored with UFC. I like UFC, and I thought maybe 5 years ago I was more familiar with some of the fighters than I am now, but I'm proud to say that Cleveland has a champion in Stipe Miocic, which we talked
great
about
guy.
During the break. But if you look at the ring, inside the ring, there's almost not enough mat space left for all the marketing that is on the mat from one of these fights.
Right.
You know, it's almost like over in Japan, there's marketing everywhere. But that's what the UFC's begun. And that means that these namesake companies that are, you know, Toyo Tires and these, you know, supplement companies and all these, they all want to be a part of UFC because, and there's got to be a return on investment for them, that when they spend that kind of money, people are going UFC and assimilating it with that company so much so that it's driving their revenue to continue to spend what they spend in marketing dollars.
And it's because the audience has to be there that it's so big and they love it so much that they watch it, they buy it, they go to it.
The pay-per-view is only going up every time.
It's just amazing what they've done. But, I mean, it goes back to, really, it goes back to the success of NASCAR.
It does.
When you're talking about marketing and being able
on
to put a number on a car, but put the Tide car, the M&M car, you know, all those cars.
And all the badges along the driver's side.
You take a look at soccer. You take a look at the big clubs around the world and the competitive marketing battle to get your name on the front of Manchester United's jersey. When will that happen in the NFL?
Soon? I don't know, but it's happening in the NBA, is it not?
Yeah, it is.
Is that already going into effect, or something?
It's about ready to come in,
because I know the one thing that they're doing in the NFL, which I don't necessarily know what company was on the Browns practice.
I think there was at one time, as I remember watching the Browns practice one time when they came out, I thought Ford was on their jersey.
Yeah, but you look at, you know, Ezekiel Elliott in a Cowboys uniform or a Cowboys practice jersey, and everyone's got the badges on their shoulders.
Right. Yeah. So the numbers are amazing.
Yes.
The other story, because you were out in New England last week, but it's a quiet story right now, is that Court of Appeals has not ruled yet on the Tom Brady appeal to get
I
a different kind of hearing.
I saw plenty of free Brady shirts, I'm not going to lie, walking around Fenway Park.
And it seems so much, Matt, like the situation of last year. If you remember last year, and I think the Browns were playing their last preseason game they were up in Chicago, I think, or we were somewhere. And that's when the Brady ruling came down that he was going to be able to play in that opening game against Pittsburgh. And that would be the situation. Yeah, we were up in Chicago last year. So it was the last preseason game, which was, 10 days away from the start of the regular season?
Yep.
Shorter for them because, remember, they opened up on a Thursday night. And he was able to play. So here's New England getting ready to go to camp for a second year in a row. And they don't know if they'll have him for the first four games of the season, or do they have Garoppolo play in those four games? And then if that happened, wouldn't Brady come back and play the Browns?
He would.
In game
five.
Well, I wonder what the holdup is on that court situation.
I don't know.
And then if he doesn't get the ruling the way he wants it, if it gets denied, he can then take it to the Supreme Court.
Correct.
Okay, and that's a whole different level. He could get a delay in the decision if the Supreme Court decides not to hear it immediately, and then he could play again.
Yeah.
He could run the clock until he's almost ready to retire.
I bet.
In the legal system.
Yes.
So what do you think? Do you think that what are the odds that he plays on opening day?
I have a feeling he's going to play on opening day.
Isn't that unbelievable?
It is unbelievable.
Yeah,
for the second year in a row.
There can be no definitive ruling on that case because it continues to get into the appellate courts.
Yep.
Unbelievable what's going on in the NFL with the New England Patriots. It's so important to them because, let's face it, they play for division titles and for home field advantage in the playoffs. So if you slip a couple of times early and you lose a couple of quick games,
you make
like
the path
that,
much tougher
much
to get
more
to the
difficult.
Super Bowl. Yes.
Remember, they blew a game late in the year against Miami, I think, maybe the last game of the regular season last year, and they had a path to become the top seed in the AFC. They lost that game. I think he rested a few players, which is totally unlike Belichick. They lost that game. They ended up as the two seed, and they had to go to Denver and win, and they didn't win out there.
Sure.
Now, I don't know if Denver would have beaten them in New England, but it would have, I'm sure the Patriots would have welcomed the opportunity to play
them
in Foxborough. We'll take a timeout on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Jim Donovan and Matt Wilhelm. Nice save.
Yes.
Huh? On ESPN 850.
We're driving.
ESPN 850 WKNR.
Now back to Cleveland Browns Daily with Jim Donovan and Matt Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Now, I always pepper Matt Wilhelm when I'm with him about his Ohio State days. And remember, you and I had a great conversation during one of the OTA practices, or it might have been the minicamp.
Yeah,
but it was,
sure.
One or the other. And we were out there, and I was fascinated by the Cavs' mentality, being down 3-1.
Yeah.
Okay, and how they were going to come back. And getting ready for a big game, knowing that it's all or nothing on that night. And do you remember I said to you, what was it like the morning of the Miami National championship game. And you said you had total belief that morning that you guys were going
to
win.
We really did. And what it really boiled down to.
You really did now. You really had total belief that you were going to beat Miami.
Yes, it was a full belief in our – like LeBron said multiple times is coaches put together a great game plan.
Yeah, right.
We had a good game – we had a great game plan of what we were going to do offensively, which didn't go all that well because we, you know, we struggled offensively most of that football game because Miami was so athletic and played had so many great players on defense. But who we were to stop that explosive Miami offense defensively is what I was really wholeheartedly, you know, into as to if we can limit them and get advantageous in certain situations, we can steal this game. Mm-hmm. And I think even more so, what else I was confident in, and I think it goes back to our conversation about Hugh Jackson and training camp, is it going to be physical, is I knew we were more physical than they were.
That's what I was. The thing I was going to ask you was, the thing that rubbed Miami the wrong way in the game was nobody had hit them that way.
Correct.
Right? And that much.
Yes.
And everything was a hit on them.
And I think there's an intimidation factor when you play a team that hasn't lost in a long time.
And it's a completely different brand. They played a completely different brand of football, right?
They did.
Speed.
Yes.
Superstarism.
And stretching you out and, and featuring these players. And it's like, well, let's eliminate some of these players and have these other guys try to beat us. But, I mean, but punching them in the mouth continually. And like I said to you last time we did this show, maybe 2 weeks ago, is – if we don't walk away with a win, at least the teams that we're playing, because of this new culture and this new mentality, it's like they're now walking with a limp or have a bloody lip because of the way that the Cleveland Browns now play football.
Yeah. Sam in Akron joins us on this Monday here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Jim, Matt. How you guys doing today?
Good, man.
We're doing good. Thanks for checking in. You have a question for Matt, huh?
Yeah, well, actually, I got two things real quick. I got to tell you this semi-embarrassing story that only you guys and your listeners could probably get a chuckle to. But I'm from Akron, but I actually live down in the Tampa, Florida area now.
Yeah.
But trust me, my heart's in Northeast Ohio. My finger's on the pulse at all times.
Good.
but anyway, I get back in my work vehicle today, and a really big show was playing the best of course. And when I get back in, they were on the segment right shortly before your show came on where they were talking about, LeBron coming home and
right,
Hannah
right.
was on there, and it was all the emotions were flying, you know. And I'm not going to lie, I kind of got caught in the moment for a second, just thinking in my head about being down 3-1 and 2 years later, and now I'm listening to this and how much it means. And all of a sudden I got a, couple little happy tears running down my cheek, you know what I mean? And now, just to stop for a second, I'm 6'4", about 300 pounds. I'm no little guy.
Can you play right tackle?
I was. I lived the dream in high school. I'm the Al Bundy of my area, But anyway, I pulled to a traffic light, and I looked to my left, and there's a U.S. mail truck next to me in the left lane. And you know how in those vehicles, they sit on the passenger side,
Yeah.
And I look over, and this guy's probably about 300 pounds. And he's got a big smile on his face, and he's got a couple tears running down his cheek. And I think to myself, I'm like, there's no way, And I roll my window down, and he's got RBS pumping on the radio, and I just looked at him. I said, you listen to a really big show? He goes, you're damn right I am. And the light turned green, and we went separate directions. But I thought it was kind of cool, being in Florida and, that
very
happened.
Very cool.
But, hey, Matt, real quick question for you. I called in and spoke to you a while back about the three most famous favorite Cleveland moments.
Sure.
And I told you my number one was you laying the wood on Dorsey.
Yes.
In the national title game. one of the highlights of my life, by the way, man. That's awesome. But as a fan, of course. Anyway, my question is this. I've met a couple people down here that are Hurricane fans and whatnot. And, everybody's got, a story. And, we all know about the infamous play, that happened that, a lot of people talk about, the pass interference play. And I want to know, as a player on that field and, and a big-time player in that game, what have you dealt with throughout your career, in locker rooms and things like that from players? What kind of scrutiny or anything have you ever heard negative as far as that goes? And what do you say to those people, if anything? Because I know a win's a win, and, we've all been on both sides of, good calls and bad calls and things like that. But, hey, guys, I'm going to hang up and listen to what you got to say. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Sam, thanks very much. First of all, on his first point, then we'll get to your point, okay,
sure.
Your part of the question. I have to admit an embarrassing situation. Matt was not in the studio when I first arrived, or you went outside before we went on the air. And I could hear the segment that he was talking about on the Really Big Show. And it was Brian Windhorst. And Brian's always on the show, right?
Right.
And he was talking about, so tonight's a really big night. And I didn't realize it was the best of. I didn't realize it was going back to the best of when LeBron was coming back. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I missed something. What is going on tonight? I mean, it's Home Run Derby.
Yeah.
I mean, LeBron's not doing anything tonight, isn't he, on vacation? So I didn't get that it was a tape show at first until a couple of minutes in. But that was a great night. I remember that night and how special it was. They didn't win that night.
No.
They lost that night.
The Knicks, correct?
And then they came back two nights later and they won in Chicago. But no, they didn't win that night. But it was a great night downtown. It gave you a taste of what it was going to be like in the finals. And it was just an appetizer.
It was.
Okay, now back to his question.
Back to me. So you always – I play with or against guys that were, of course, at the U or guys – at other places, they have an utter distaste for anything Ohio State. Probably because we win a lot and we carry ourselves with confidence, right, and it's just a story program. But be very honest, I have gotten it sporadically throughout my career. And to be honest, the same thing I always say about the kind of like my suit, it's like the ink is dry, the ring is mine. There's nothing you can do to go back and change it. And I said, you know, whether he was a paid official or whether he wasn't, it was irrelevant. It was, and I go back to, if you guys were that great, then blow us out the way you were supposed to. Because you left the door open and we kicked the door down, you know, and made it the game to take it to overtime that allowed that play to happen. And then when you had an opportunity, as great as you were, to stop us, you couldn't. Mm-hmm. And then we stopped your offense that no one could stop.
Right.
So that's pretty much my comeback to anybody that says anything about that penalty in that football game.
I think I've mentioned this to you, but and you're right about the Miami, you know, feeling towards that. Now, at that point in time, Butch Davis was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns and had really just left Miami to become the head coach of the Browns. And the Browns were getting set to play in the playoffs against the Steelers when Ohio State won the national championship. So you guys played on a Friday night, and the Browns were playing over at Heinz Field on a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
Okay. And in the build-up to that game, now remember there was about a month right after you guys had beaten Michigan.
Yep.
And they actually played a couple of games deeper into December. They played like Syracuse. They had to finish up matters and stay undefeated.
They had a championship game, and we did not.
Here was the thing, and I can remember there were a lot of University of Miami guys on Butch's staff. Okay, Chuck Pagano was on, and Butch himself, and he had recruited that team. And I can remember talking to them all. And they were very, very, you know, they realized they were in Ohio and they realized that, you know, the Buckeyes were legendary here and had a great year. But they also, remember, they recruited a lot of those players.
Sure.
Okay. I mean, that was basically their team that they had handed over. And they felt that it would be a 14-point difference in the game.
Yeah.
Okay. And they weren't saying, oh, Miami will kill them. They just said, Jim, I got to be honest with you. I really think the Hurricanes will beat them by 14 points. Why? Too much speed, too much athleticism. I go, really? Yeah, I mean, Ohio State. Plus, remember, Ohio State, you guys had unbelievable finishes.
Yeah.
Purdue.
Correct.
Right? Michigan.
Illinois.
Michigan.
Prior to Michigan, yes.
Yeah, Michigan. Yeah. And they just thought that you were kind of living a little bit on a prayer. But they thought a 14-point game. Solid 14-point win for
That's
Miami.
How good those guys
and it's
were.
Amazing. Now, you felt total confidence.
Yes.
When did you get the game plan? When did they install that game plan?
Throughout bowl practice. So even back in Columbus.
And did you feel like, wow, this is a good plan?
At first you're like, wow, they're really good. They made playing football look easy. And had no knock against the ACC. It was just like they were that good and they were just mowing through teams.
They were.
And it was just at first when you watch them, you're like, how are we going to do this? And then as you sit back and you understand who they are and what makes them up, and then, you know, Mark D'Antonio and his staff gets together and creates that game plan, it's day by day just getting us to buy into whatever it is the game plan was. Like, what are we going to stop? Yeah. How are we going to slow them down? How are we going to negate their speed and the things that we were going to do? And, like, I mean specifically on the defensive side of the ball.
Right.
Because it's like I was confident in Maurice Claret and Craig Krenzel to not give the ball to the other team. And
when you mention those names, I go back. Claret,
It's just so it was just it took time for us to get to the point where the morning of you wake up and go, we're going to go win this football game.
See, that's the amazing thing to me. I love to know that kind of stuff. I love to know, like, when LeBron and the Cavaliers were sitting in the Oracle Arena and they're going into a game seven. Did they say to themselves, hey, listen, we got these guys on the run right now because we've denied them twice? Or were they saying, hey, maybe, you know, can we beat these guys a third straight time? And that's that Ohio State victory in that game was, I mean, legendary.
Yes.
Okay, I mean, that was a legendary run that year. And, you know, I'm always interested in the feeling inside. Mike is in Youngstown, and he joins us right now. Hi, Mike.
Gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Good,
great,
thank you.
Great show as usual. I hadn't been listening for a while, but I heard about, you know, what we think or, you know, could happen this upcoming season.
Yeah, the reality of what, you know, can you be realistic about what you want or what you think will happen?
Well, the reality is I did hear you guys say this. It's it has a lot to do, obviously, with the quarterback, but I really think that you just hear the players, but, you know, hearing people like yourselves and other media people talking way that the Browns players and everybody are buying into them, I think this will tie into it. I think that Hugh Jackson and his staff couldn't have been any more of possibly a solution to our problems over the years by everything that they're putting together as a staff. And I believe that RG3 or McCown, one or the other, if they come through and play well, I think we're definitely going to pick the tone up on defense. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to be at least, I'm not going to say at least 8-8, but I think that we would have a possibility, even with the record and the players buying into it, being 7-9, 8-8, but I really appreciate it and appreciate the show, and I love to hear anything that I can hear about Ohio State and you guys reminiscing about the Buckeyes. So go Browns, and love listening to the show.
Well, thanks a
lot.
Thank you. You know, I love talking to Matt about that. I really do, because I remember that year really well. I don't know if you remember this, but I remember you were at the Sports Awards.
Correct, yes,
and
right
came
after
on the 6 o'clock news with me. We were up in the – and I was just fascinated with that team.
Yeah.
That is a precious, precious team.
And what's funny is, and I know we got to grab a break, but if you look at that University of Miami team and the number of guys that they put into the NFL.
Unbelievable.
If you go back and do the same thing about Ohio, us Buckeyes, we had just about as many. You know, I mean, I think we set the – I know that Ohio State might have this year set a bunch of records with first-round guys and so on and so forth, but I think we had 13 guys that next year, the 2003 draft.
Right.
When Claret got drafted and Krenzel and, you know, Chris Gamble and Michael Jenkins.
Sure.
I mean, that Will Smith, you know, rest in peace. You know, they were all drafted that next year.
Okay. We'll be back and we'll wrap up the show. It has flown by on this Monday.
As it always does.
We have a return engagement tomorrow. Anyway, we'll be back right after this on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Now back to Cleveland Browns Daily with Jim Donovan and Matt Wilhelm on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, so we are back and getting ready to say so long to you for this Monday as we're another day closer, my friend.
We are.
I love training camp.
So do I.
I think training camp is
I love watching it rather than participating in it.
Now, am I hearing right that the Browns are looking maybe at afternoon practices?
They are. It has been announced.
It's in stone.
Yes. Majority of their practices, I'd say 90% of their practices are going to start at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Yes.
Rob Chudzinski did that in his 1 year as the head coach of the Browns. But Mike Patton was definitely like an 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning guy.
And the mentality behind it is
the
walkthrough. Yeah, you learn all day to go out and master in pads and play football.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have an opportunity to review that in pads, fix it in the morning again, and go back and do it again. That repetitive nature that we always – instead of going out, putting the work, and letting your body relax, it's kind of like you relax after practice is over and that next morning, and then you crank it up for that 2.5 hours.
Well, again, a major announcement here on Cleveland Browns Daily for tomorrow's show. It appears that Tony Grossi will be here
105.
At 105.
So tune in right away.
105 tomorrow. Tony Grossi, that's always a special moment here on Cleveland Browns Daily. Huh? That's like booking Bob Hope.
It is.
Or something like that, all right? Anyway, look forward to seeing you again tomorrow, Matt. I'm glad you had a great vacation.
Thank you, I did.
In New England. Glad to be with you. I'll be here tomorrow with Matt. We'll be back with you on Cleveland Browns Daily. Thanks to the great Jason Gibbs for producing today, and thanks to you as we continue on to countdown to when football takes over, and that's July 29th when the Browns open up training camp in Berea. Have a great day. Stay cool. The heat is here, and it's coming the rest of the week. For Matt Wilhelm, I'm Jim Donovan. See you tomorrow, and talk to you tomorrow here on Cleveland Browns Daily.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.